Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone. Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
Good afternoon and welcome. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a very busy Wednesday. A lot coming your way today. Dustin Colquitt, Chiefs punter, is going to join us a little bit later on here in the Red Zone as we will discuss the kicking game for the Kansas City Chiefs with one of the best punters in the National Football League. We're also going to talk to former Chiefs defensive end Eric Hicks. We'll talk about the front seven. The defense comes front and center with Eric Hicks. 14 sacks in 2000 for Eric Hicks. Outstanding defensive lineman in his time with Kansas City, and then ultimately on to the Jets, and a cup of coffee at the end with the Detroit Lions. We'll talk to Eric Hicks, his thoughts on the progress that is being made along the defensive line. So that coming up a little bit later on, and really some news as the draft picks begin to sign. Kendrick Lewis, safety from Ole Miss, fifth-round pick for the Kansas City Chiefs, inked pick number 136. Overall in the NFL draft, and Kendrick Lewis in camp and ready to go. We'll be ready on day one of training camp, and that's good news. A lot of people think we may see Eric Berry and Kendrick Lewis side by side, two starting rookie corners, be an upgrade in athleticism, be a real lack in experience, but you've got a very experienced coordinator that you would think if you're going to go out with two rookie safeties, a guy who might be able to get the job done would be Romeo Crennel. You lean on his experience to put them in a position to succeed. But Kendrick Lewis helping his chances to climb up the depth chart as he gets his deal done with the Kansas City Chiefs. The first draft pick to get signed. One down, six to go, with about a month to go until we get to a training camp there at the end of July. All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up next, Eric Hicks, Chiefs defensive end, former Chiefs defensive end. He's next here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left of the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate, Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to KCChiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday, and we're going to talk front seven for the Kansas City Chiefs with a guy who manned that position, for about 7-8 years in the red and gold. Eric Hicks, former Chiefs defensive end, joins us here in the Red Zone. Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
We appreciate the time. Let's talk about this football team. This is a big year for the Kansas City Chiefs, and there are a lot of expectations. I know you've been around that before. There are a lot of expectations, but I don't know that there are expectations of this is a Super Bowl-caliber team. I think most people are looking at it, hey, this is a team that can jump up to 500, and I think that's maybe selling this team short. How big a jump do you think a team can make in 1 year? Obviously, specifically looking at what this football team might be able to make in 1 year.
Well, I think the team can make a jump. Super Bowl, I think that might be a little bit optimistic, but with the amount of talent that they've amassed over the years, just in the draft alone, you would hope those guys would step up and start making a significant impact. They have some good pieces in place through free agency. The defense has been built up over the past couple of years. Obviously, you've got a quarterback that you think can do some things for you. So the pieces are there. It's just whether the players are going to respond to this type of regime and head coach, and hopefully they do. The town deserves a winner.
Yeah, and of course it's been a little while since the town has had a winner. We know how electric the stadium can get when they have one, and how much that seems to revitalize or maybe energize the team. How big of an impact is a full Arrowhead rocking at its maximum capacity?
Well, I think it's definitely good for the Kansas City Chiefs. It's good for the NFL. I mean, Arrowhead is a flagship stadium. Everybody knew that it was a fearful place to come in. And it's obviously it hasn't been full as it has in the past, but that doesn't have anything to do with the fans. I mean, the product that's been put on the field hasn't really deserved the attention that the fans here can provide. But it's definitely an intimidating factor, especially when you get into those Monday night games. It's probably the best atmosphere I've ever been around in my life. It was a magical place. It still is a magical place. And people knew that when they came in there that they had to prepare specifically for that crowd noise and for that atmosphere, and that automatically put them behind the eight ball. So hopefully we can get back to that, and hopefully the team will put something out on the field for the fans to get back to that level of excitement.
And no part of the team benefits more from great noise than the defensive line, and really maybe in general the front seven. And that's one of the places where this team has got to get better. Their sack total last year climbed from 10 in 2008 to 22 in 2009. That puts them about halfway to what the average Super Bowl team produces. 42, 43 sacks is about average for a Super Bowl team. And the Chiefs did not invest a lot in that front seven. I mean, it's clear they're trying to rebuild from a team that 2 years ago was 2-14, this year 4-12. That means you've got more than just one or two holes you need to fill, and one draft class, maybe even two draft classes, is probably not enough to go out and address all those holes, maybe even not two free agency periods. And so you can't, my point there is you can't fill every hole if you've got too many holes in a short period of time, or you're counting on guys to get better. You believe that talent's there, and with a new system or a tweaked system, as might be the case this year with Romeo Crennel coming in as the defensive coordinator, and experience at the NFL level, that a team can get better. How much? What's your experience on how much better maybe you got as a player from the day you first walked into an NFL camp to whenever you felt like you were playing at your highest level as an NFL defensive end?
Well, it is difficult, and my situation was a little bit unique, where obviously there wasn't any expectations for me. I kind of took the opportunity that I was given and ran with it, and was taught by some great players and had some really great coaching. People always say they didn't address the front seven. The front seven has been addressed year after year. There's a lot of money on that defensive line and free agency and the linebackers. I think they need to, like you said, just get the potential out of those players. Unfortunately, Glenn Dorsey's not necessarily or at all a 5-technique, 2-gap defensive end. He's more of a Warren Sapp type of player. They think got the Tyson Jackson kid last year from LSU to play that type of position. Obviously, you have Tom Holly up there who had a good season. I thought Tom played really well last year, but they need to just get more out of those players. And if they can't get them out of there, they need to work some sort of deal where they can get the guys in here that they do need to get it done because that's a lot of money you have invested. You can't release the players. You just have to be creative in what you do with them, or you need to get them replaced through some sort of trade to get what you do need. Because Romeo Crennel is a good defensive coach, but, you know, I don't think he's going to be pulling many rabbits out of his hat. You just don't do that in the NFL, really. It's based on sound technique and sound schemes, and tricks might work here and there, but they don't work for a consistent period.
There's no doubt that you have to have talent, that a coach is not going to, you know, Kreskin his way to a championship-caliber team. You've got to have talent on the field. And, you know, your situation coming in as an undrafted rookie out of Maryland and you know, making the team and going on to have an outstanding season, an outstanding career, but especially building up to when you had a 14-sack season is entirely different. It's the opposite end of the spectrum of a Tyson Jackson. Let's focus on him. Being the number three overall pick in a draft, there are huge expectations on a player. So that is night and day. But you demonstrated the ability to get better. One, get bigger, get stronger. I remember talking to you about, you know, how much milk you would drink and all the things you were doing to try to build up your body. Tyson comes in as the right, you know, theoretically the right size, whatever that's supposed to be, coming in. But it doesn't mean that because he was the number three pick that he can't get better as well. I mean, Mario Williams, and I hate to say that and put that kind of pressure on Tyson Jackson because I think it's a different scheme. He was Mario Williams was an end in a 4-3, which allowed him to, you know, go more for sacks, and Tyson Jackson's going to have to stay home and have more responsibilities than just getting to the quarterback. But, you know, is it possible for Tyson Jackson to take giant leaps forward the way you took giant leaps forward? I guess that would be my question.
Well, I think he can make improvement, but the type of improvement that they're looking for him to make, he is not going to be put in a position to make that type of improvement, to be a double-digit sack guy, to be a player that impacts the game to the point where they're going to have to start scheming for him. Coming out, watching him in the draft, that's a lot of money to pay for a guy who's going to be just a two-gap defensive end. If you can predict that the guy is going to be Richard Seymour automatically, then yeah. But anytime you give somebody over $30 million guaranteed that has never played in the NFL before, you want him to step in day one and make an impact. And if not day one, at least by year two. And you bring up Mario Williams. Mario Williams is an athlete of freakish proportions, whereas Tyson Jackson is a big kid. Played well at LSU, played in a very good league in the SEC. But the problem is that, in my opinion, you don't pay a two-gap defensive end that much money, because the expectations are for him to come in there and just explode and have such an impact on the game to where he needs to be schemed around and all that. I think he can get better, and Romeo Crennel, defensive line coach as well, as a defensive coordinator, but I think you just have too much expectations for what you want the kid to do.
And again, I don't think I agree with you that he's not going to be in a scheme that allows him to put up those sack totals. You mentioned Richard Seymour. I suppose that would be the best, you know, a better comparison. But even that, Richard Seymour was on the side. You know, when we talked to Scott Pioli about drafting him last year, he said, well, I'd compare him more to Ty Warren than I would Richard Seymour, because Richard Seymour was over on the right side and they used him more as a pressure type of defensive end, gave him more leeway to just get after the quarterback. You mentioned being a two-gapper. We've talked about this before on the Red Zone, but I think the fans certainly want to hear it from a guy who's been on the field and in the trenches. Define what you mean when you tell people, hey, he's going to be a two-gap defensive lineman.
Well, in the 3-4 defensive scheme, usually it's just three down linemen, obviously, and four linebackers, with each lineman on the down line, one of the three being a two-gap guy. And a two-gap guy is you have the gap to your outside and you have the gap to your inside, and then the linebackers play off of you, usually. It's usually usually is a player who's very strong, who's stout, who can just sit in there because you're going to take a lot of double teams. You have to be patient. You're not in a very explosive three-point stance. You're kind of in a read-and-react type situation. And basically, you're just out there to eat up blockers, to let your linebackers, who are supposed to be the, you know, the bad guys on your defense, the guys that are going to make all the plays, they need to go and make the plays. So usually you're one of the guys in there that is expected just to eat up and kind of be a team-first type of guy and just play your role. And, you know, if nobody ever really hears your name, that means you're probably doing a good job, actually, as a 3-4 defensive end. And, you know, that's just, like I said, it's a lot for that high of a pick to be placed in that type of situation. You would expect a pick that high to be someone who could make much more of an explosive impact for your football team, in my opinion.
And we're talking to Eric Hicks, former Chiefs defensive end. And Eric, so building on that, it's a spot you said you're going to get double teamed. To me, if you're doing your job right, you do get double teamed. And it seemed too often that Tyson Jackson was tied up by just one offensive lineman. In other words, one offensive lineman was able to neutralize him, which means that a guard or a tight end, depending upon which shoulder he lines up on, or a center or a tackle, depending upon how far up or down the line they move him, is now free to go seek for those linebackers, and it makes it more difficult. How much of that, you know, the Chiefs have obviously changed defensive line coaches. They've changed defensive coordinators. You know, I know there have been times in your career, you'd use the term handcuffed, but where your responsibility changed from your 14-sack season where you were on the outside in a defensive end role where you were able to get up the field and just go after the quarterback to win other times where you were asked to play more of a responsibility where you had to suck up blockers, where you're not able to just get out there and get after the quarterback. With the change in scheme, with a change in coaching, that's where I would look at it and say, okay, Tyson Jackson has a chance to grow a lot as a football player if the coaching and the schemes now fit more what it is he does well. Would you agree?
I think that a scheme can definitely help a player or hinder a player. Obviously, you're out there to get paid just to do what you're told to do.
Right.
But going back to your previous point about him being handled by, you know, one blocker and allowing somebody else to go, that was a lot of the case. And I don't know Tyson Jackson. I'm sure he's a wonderful person. I'm just saying what I saw on TV seemed like he had a very hard time transitioning into the NFL. And unfortunately, he's a high-profile pick, so the camera's always going to be on him. And it was just disheartening at times to see him kind of get blown off the ball. And obviously he can get better now. He understands what the NFL is not forever. If it was easy, everybody'd be doing it. Right. I mean, so, you know, there's grown men that are trying to pay their mortgages, support their family, pay their child support, whatever they got to do. So people are out there trying to take your livelihood from you in order to make themselves better. The only thing that's discouraging is that even if you look at Tyson when he came out of LSU and they're showing plays, he didn't make those explosive plays that you saw Mario Williams make or when Julius Peppers came out. You didn't see him make those explosive plays. They showed hustle plays. And if you're going to pay a guy that much money,
right,
you expect him, A, to be dominant, and B, then to hustle. But, you know, I think it's just asking a lot of a kid to be, you know, a savior of a defensive line. And I always tell people the story that they showed one play over and over again on draft day. It was of Tyson making a tackle 40 yards down the field, and people talked about hustle and how he was a hustle and how he was a patriot type of guy, even though he got drafted by the Chiefs.
Right.
But he was a patriot type of guy. And what happened on the play, a particular play, was called a shovel pass. And the defensive end on that play is supposed to make a big pile at the line of scrimmage. What his correct read is, he's supposed to make a pile, and then the running back won't have the opportunity to run 50 yards down the field. So if he would have done what he was supposed to do from the get-go, he could have made the tackle at the line of scrimmage, and he didn't, so he had to make it 50 yards down the field. But it's just funny how people can make themselves, you know, believe anything. And like I said, Tyson's probably a wonderful kid, and I'm sure he's a good football player. But we're talking about expectations, people have to be realistic. It's just that people don't know what they don't know a lot of the time. And it's probably better that way sometimes.
We're talking to Eric Hicks, former Chiefs defensive end. You mentioned Tamba Hali making the transition out to outside linebacker. I'm with you. I thought he did about as well as you could expect a guy to do in year one in making that transition, and a guy that, by everything I've read, never even sniffed the linebacker position. In fact, he played some D-tackle in addition to D-end at Penn State. And so you're talking about a guy who, you know, maybe in college they were looking at being D-tackle, D-end, now moving all the way outside to outside linebacker. I think he made remarkable progress for just 1 year. How much better do you suppose he can get here in his second year working at that position?
Oh, I thought he did a great job. Tom is a hard-working kid and a really good athlete. You know, he looks a little awkward a lot of times running around out there, but it doesn't matter. He gets to where he needs to be. I think one of the things he's going to run into the problem now is that he's going to get double-teamed a lot more. Mike Vrabel, obviously a great player for a long time in this league, but getting a little long in the tooth. I'm sure he can still get the job done, but as time goes on, you know, it's going to be harder for him to get the wheels moving like they used to. So I think Tom might get schemed a little bit. You know, the thing that would significantly help Tamba is if they get Derek Johnson going. Hopefully they can get him on the field and get going and get some production from the guy they have, guy they drafted high and can make plays. So I think Tamba would benefit greatly from that. Obviously, he's going to benefit greatly from the safety they just got. And I'm sure Romeo has chomping at the bit to get these guys going.
How about size at the cornerback position? Brandon Flowers has been a good young player, an ascending player his first couple of years. They drafted Javier Arenas. Looking back at the drafting of the New England Patriots with Scott Pioli running the operation, they were very effective in drafting corners in later rounds, even later than Javier Arenas was drafted in the second round, getting guys in the third, the fourth, the fifth round that would play very productive football for them. And oftentimes they were guys that, you know, they lasted down to those later rounds, as I think Brandon Flowers lasted to the second and Arenas lasted to later in the second round, because they weren't the ideal height or the ideal weight or the ideal 40 time. But guys like Ellis Hobbs and numerous corners in New England that were effective, ended up playing very good football and ultimately getting very big lucrative contracts, oftentimes to move on from the Patriots, but lucrative contracts because they played the game at a very high level. What do you think about the importance of size at the cornerback spot? Because while Brandon Carr has the right size that most people would look for, a Flowers who's played very well in an Arenas who played very well at Alabama, that's one thing. Playing it in the NFL is different. I'm aware of that. But how important do you think the size of the cornerback is as far as being effective at the NFL level?
Well, I think it helps. Obviously, if you're going to play some type of scheme, it helps if you're, you know, a 6 foot, 6 foot one, 6 foot two corner. But they don't grow on trees. Guys, there's one thing that you cannot replace in the NFL, and it's experience. And these two corners for the Chiefs in Carr and Flowers, they've been baptized by fire
right
these last 2 years. And, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, that old adage and everything. These guys are almost to where guys 5 and 6 years down the road would hope to be, because they've seen so many things with lack of pass rush and having a whole coverage for all these times. And it is amazing what experience will do for you. It will accelerate your growth and your maturity and your development. And I think they should probably be on the edge of a pretty good breakout here. Definitely with the safety tandem that's back there for the Chiefs. Also, I think these guys are going to be all right. If they can get any type of pass rush generated, I think these two guys are ready for an exceptional year. Like I said, there is no substitute for experience, especially in the NFL. It's a man's game. It's an offensive league. All the rules
right
are set up for offense now for explosive plays and for excitement on TV. That's what people want to see. I believe it waters down the game, but hey, you know, who am I to argue? But I think these guys are ready to go. And with building through the draft with some guys who can come in, play nickel, other positions, dime, stuff like that, I think that you should expect probably big things from the Chiefs secondary this year.
Eric Hicks is with us here in the Red Zone. Eric, before I let you go, our final four. Four quick questions, and I'll start with this. Who's the toughest offensive tackle you ever played against?
Ooh, Leon Searcy.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. That's a name from a couple years ago. He was outstanding.
He was flat mean. He was just very, very mean individual.
All right. How many sacks this year for Tom Bahaly?
I say double digits.
Okay. All right. Would you like to see, this has been one of the rumors here of late, your alma mater, Maryland, go to the Big Ten?
No way. ACC all the way.
Yeah, all right. So you're not pro on that?
I'm not pro any of these teams moving.
All right. Finally, Chiefs record. What do you think they are this year?
I think they're 7-9 to 9-7 range,
okay.
Honestly.
Okay. I think that's fair, and I think that's kind of where a lot of people are hoping they're going to be. A lot of work to be done to get there. We'll see if they can get there. Eric, always appreciate the time. Thanks for talking with us, and hopefully we'll talk to you again down the road.
No problem. Thank you.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking, with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com, and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365, and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at kcchiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs Cheerleader squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Jamal Charles!
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game!
And the Chiefs put the hammer down!
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime!
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, it is the Red Zone here on a Wednesday at kcchiefs.com. My thanks to Eric Hicks, former Chiefs defensive end. We're going to talk to Dustin Colquitt, Chiefs punter. Coming up next here in the Red Zone, a couple of things about the punting. Number one, Dustin Colquitt had an outstanding year in 2009. That is great. You'd certainly like him to keep the distance, the hang time, the net, all the numbers he put up. 41 kicks inside the 20, 24 fair catches, third in the in net punting, and that's with 11 more inside the 20 than first place Oakland, 7 more than second place St. Louis, also second in average return yards at 7.1 yards per return. Those are great numbers. One statistic that you'd like to see go down, number of punts Dustin Colquitt had 96 punts in 2009. Give you a comparison, go back to 2006, Chiefs' last playoff year, 71 punts en route to that 9-7 year that had them as a wild card. And the year before, 2005, where most years they were probably good enough to be a playoff team at 10-6, but just missed, only 65 punts. So number of punts is big. Now, how do you get there? Obviously, convert on third down. Don't get taken off the field. Don't have to punt, at least, or get closer. Make it a field goal instead of a punt distance, and you're going to be better off in that statistical category. In fact, the Chiefs next to last in the NFL, 31st overall in third down conversions last year at 27.3%. Only the Bills ranked lower than the Chiefs in converting on third down, so they'll have to get better. How much better? It kind of depends. A little bit surprising. There are some playoff teams that rank down in the bottom half of the NFL, even beyond, and getting down towards the bottom third. The lowest ranked playoff team in third down conversion percentage, 36.2% for the Philadelphia Eagles, was only 23rd in the NFL. How about the two Super Bowl teams? Well, the Indianapolis Colts, Super Bowl runner-ups, Super Bowl losers, they were first in the NFL converting on third down at 49.2%. The Saints, I was a little surprised by this, not too far down, but not number two or three either, number six in the NFL at converting on third down at 44.7%. Looks like the minimum requirement, at least according to last year, is about 36%. Better than one-third of the time. Ideally, you want to start pushing up into the mid-40s if you want to be a very productive playoff team when it comes to your success rate on third down. That would help out in moving the ball, getting more points on the board, and, of course, less punts. Love to see Colquitt just as effective when he does punt, just not punt so much. And the Chiefs will be a better football team for it. We'll talk to Chiefs punter Dustin Colquitt. He's next here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game.
And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome back here in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. That is when we are live. Your chance to join in, chime in the chat room here at KCChiefs.com. We're going to talk to Chiefs punter Dustin Colquitt right now in the Red Zone. He is our guest as we speak. Dustin, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me this morning.
How is the atmosphere right now as far as, thinking about training camp? Is it, I can't wait for it to get here to get to the season, or would you just as soon it take a little while before it comes?
Well, I love training camp, actually. It's a good time for me just to kind of get up, and I've well, now three kids. So I don't have to worry about getting up early or a bad night for one of them. You just kind of get off and do your own thing, really, for almost a month. So I'm looking forward to that aspect. It kind of is a good preparation for the season. And if you heard anything about going on with OTAs and stuff that we were doing, it's just kind of, we got some exciting stuff going on, just new coaches and whatnot.
So does your wife share that opinion?
Not at all. No, she kind of has that, you know, single parent feeling, like, where are you? Why are you? She'll ask, you know, I'll call her like 10 o'clock. Are you just getting up? No, we just got done with our first practice, honey. I couldn't call you. I rode my bike in from River Falls to go to the first practice. But no, she's good because my parents come up, her parents come up, and so.
So it's a family effort to get you through training camp.
Exactly.
That's nice. That's nice. St. Joe, it's going to be different than River Falls, Wisconsin. Have you guys taken a look? Do you have any idea? Or the first day you land there, is that going to be the first time you see the facilities?
Yeah, it's going to feel like just you're a freshman at a new college campus, I would think, just because I've been in River Falls for the past 5 years and really kind of got used to the place, like the kind of scenery. You just feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere, no distractions. But I think they've done a really good job with the facilities up there in St. Joe. And, I mean, it looks to be our permanent home. So we'll see. I know it's going to be a little bit more humid, but it's also something that Herm Edwards and Todd Haley all said, you know, we need to find a place that's a little bit hotter to get us ready for these, you know, out the gate, we play some really, you know, hot, humid games. So it'll get us more ready for the season, I think.
You've been through that, I assume, at least with your days with the Volunteers. Do you think it is important to get adjusted to that heat, or are the couple of weeks back in Kansas City enough?
I mean, I think it is enough, but also that's coming from my perspective. I think a lot of the players would tell you that it's kind of a shock when you stay in River Falls for 3 weeks and then you come your first game back in Arrowhead. It's just so humid, you're cramping up and doing stuff like that. So I think it'll definitely help the guys that are running around being those athletes out there on the field.
All right, we're talking with Dustin Colquitt, Chiefs punter here in the Red Zone. What about River Falls? You gonna miss anything about River Falls?
Everything. I mean, I actually really love that place. I think we're gonna ride our bikes and do all the stuff that we did like that up in River Falls, but just the scenery and just some of the stuff, the historical stuff that they had there. They had really nice trout streams. You could go and fish and stuff if you ever had, like, a free night out. And so I kind of got used to my, you know, the daily riding around and doing stuff like that. So that place will definitely always be special, but, you know, it's probably time for a new place.
What are your off-season workouts like away from OTAs? Take me through what you do when the season ends, going up to OTAs, and then what are you doing now between OTAs and camp?
Well, I usually took like about 4 or 5 days off, and then I actually just got a membership at Lifetime Fitness out here off 135th because you just got to keep your legs going. And the first, you know, 5 to 7 days of camp are the hardest because if you haven't done very much, you know, we've got a big running test. And then, you know, the first, right out of the gate, if you don't pass that, you don't pass the physical, you can't practice until you're, you know, through that test. And so I got this membership, and I've been running over there, been lifting over there, and then I'll start swimming and stuff just to start kind of, you know, getting in that training camp mode. Because if you can get through those first 5 to 7 days and have, you know, good, you know, fresh legs, that'll kind of set the tone for your whole season.
So you've got to pass the running test as well.
Absolutely. I know, they make non-athletes do it as well.
Do they cut you a break?
No breaks. No, we run with the kind of the linebackers and
okay,
stuff like that, and so they expect us to make it too, just in case we got to run anybody down again.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So what you don't do any you know, serious weightlifting? It's more about stretching, keeping the muscles you know, where you can get that full extension through, or no? Do you do some lifting to try to add muscle?
Yeah, I do. I stay away, like right this time of year, I stay a little bit away from upper body stuff, and I'm doing like mainly lower body stuff, just working on just those little muscles like the adductors and just any kind of curls, extensions, just all leg stuff. And I do a lot of stuff on the treadmill, like sideways stuff on the treadmill, just like pushing off, just to really start working those muscles, kind of shocking them just so that the first, like I said, week or so of camp, it's easier. Then that's when I start lifting a more upper body, because when you're kicking, you don't lift a whole lot of that lower body stuff. So,
what kind of actual kicking work do you do?
Right now, I kick about once a week, and I'll go over there and run and kick once a week over there at the complex. And so I'll work out here 3 days a week and then go in one day a week. But as it gets closer to camp, I usually kick about three times that week right before camp, and then two the week of camp. And then I just feel like I'm ready to go however many times we got to kick. Because usually they're good these days about keeping us from kicking, you know, twice a day and all that stuff, especially if there's only one guy in camp.
Now, do you have a guy? Do they provide someone to go out there and help you fetch balls, or do you just get a basket of, you know, like 500 footballs you got, however many you need?
No, that's right. Actually, I just come out here. I've kicked a little bit out here at Blue Valley, out here off 159th, and I do that a lot. But I use it as a workout. I'll hit a few balls and then run down and get them and kick them back.
Okay.
And so I just kind of use it as kind of a workout. And that's my kind of time to be alone, because that's the biggest thing that, like, a hitter in baseball, or a punter, a field goal kicker, pitchers, you know, you just, in our profession, you just sometimes feel completely out on an island. And so for me to kick in the summer, like right now, when I'm alone, I don't have anybody talking to me, I just kind of get down to the grassroots of what I do. And so it makes me feel more comfortable when I'm out there and 15 yards, you know, from anybody close.
How many kicks before your leg's tired?
It just depends. I do the quality over quantity right now. I try to have good workouts. If I'm hitting the ball not very good out of the break, I'll shut it down immediately and, you know, kick, you know, the next day, because you don't want any kind of bad reps, especially going into a training camp. And so right now, if I hit, you know, over 30 balls a day, that's too many for me, because I want to, you know, train my leg to hit them good. Because during the game, you have a span of 3 hours where you might get five punts, you might get nine, you might get two. Who knows? This year, you know, with everything that we're doing and just some of the looks like kind of tools that we're going to be have on offense, I may not be that busy. So I got to, you know, I got to train my leg to handle those things.
How do you split up, you know, practicing for, you know, say going for the old school coffin corner kick, where you're looking for altitude and directional, you know, trying to put it out on the sideline versus just booming it away straight away, going for distance? And I know, talking to you in the past, you've said you've got a variety of different kicks that you actually put out there. How do you divide up your time on what you work with?
Well, a lot of the time, like during OTAs, I really didn't hit hardly any backed up punts. I did a lot of rugby stuff. I did a lot of the coffin corners like you're talking about, for those kind of special situations where, you know, we're up at the end of the game, they might have, you know, 10 men up rushing us, and we just got to get it out where you want the ball close to the sidelines as possible. I've done a lot of stuff like that. Now, as we get into camp, I'll start working on backed up stuff, just kind of a process. You start with the smaller punts, and then you kind of work your way back the field, kind of like visually. And, you know, once you get in training camp, you've kind of hit all those kicks, and then I'll start over again. I'll start doing the rugby punts, the coffin corners, and then the backed up stuff. And then once those first preseason game starts, you feel like you've kind of hit every punt that you could possibly hit.
And the backed up is just the one where you get to boom it away.
Absolutely. Swing for the Billy Butler it out
yeah.
of here.
Is that your favorite one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's every punter's favorite one, just because you can kind of, it's like kickball back in like third grade. You're just trying to swing for the fences or hit the air conditioning duct on the other side of the gym. You're just aiming for something as far out as possible, try to get good hang, and then let all the athletes do the rest of the work.
How much of the technique is just, I mean, I think it's been well documented, come from a family of punters, and your father, a couple of Super Bowl rings with the Steelers as a punter. How much is it, you know, just you go out there and it's raw natural ability to hit it, and how much is the actual technique where you need, I've said that, you know, I think eventually the future may be that teams have a punting coach, they have a place kicking coach, they have a return coach. You know, if you wanted to get down to the nitty gritty of it, you would seem to be in a spot where you could use your own, you know, swing doctor, for lack of a better term.
Absolutely, and that's what you see. You see guys that are able in baseball, like in your infield, to say, hey, you're tipping pitches. And so you're exactly right. You know, we got a guy, we're lucky we have a guy like Coach Hoffman that has been a special teams coach, or you can't even say special teams coach because he just became that, but he's been a special teams guru for as long as I can remember. And you hear his name when you talk about guys that just retired, you know, possibly Hall of Famers and Jeff Fiegels. And he knows if I'm hitting the ball bad, he's like Mike Prefer was. You know, he could just listen to the ball coming off my foot and know, you know, something's not right in the technique. And so he could just watch you and really tell you what's going on. But, yeah, on those backed-up punts, you really just got to be careful, you know, perfect drop and really smooth, because the idea is to just absolutely crush a ball. But at the same time, you got to make sure all the mechanics are right or you can get in some trouble quick. But it will eventually become such a specialized thing that we'll have a kicking coach, and it's just that important.
Yeah, and do all that, all those fine points, while 300-pound men are launching themselves at you. It's a very easy job to do, I would think, standing back there. We're talking to Dustin Colquitt here in the Red Zone. 41 kicks downed inside the 20 last year, 24 fair catches, third in net. I was looking through the numbers, though. Not only you're third in net, but had 11 more than Leckler for first place, and I forget the Rams guy's name. The punter
for Donnie Jones.
Donnie Jones, thank you. Seven more inside the 20 for him, and I think that's something to keep in mind when you look at it. You know, if you're knocking it inside the 20, you can't just boom it away as far as you want. Second in average return yardage, 7.1 return yards against. That's a hell of a statistical year. Are you impressed? Are you proud? Is that make you satisfied with what you were able to accomplish last year?
I was definitely happy with how we played last year, special teams wise. I know Hoff came in and he was put in a situation where he had always worked with, you know, three guys. All of a sudden now he's got 45 guys that are playing special teams and he's in charge of all that stuff. And I thought he did a great job of keeping it very simple, keeping the guys excited about it, because, you know, at the same time they're learning a brand new offense and defense and stuff like that. And so he really kind of came in and said, look, we're not going to be overcomplicated. We're going to use our athletic ability, our speed, just all those important things that keep it fun for those guys that are, you know, stressed out about learning some of those offense and defensive stuff. And so I thought it was good for him to come in. He really helped Ryan kind of get to a point where he could kick in the National Football League, which he had a great year. And then our coverage guys did great all year. We didn't allow hardly any, you know, return yards. And the inside the 20s are obviously a testament to that. That's something that Todd Haley personally challenged. And in training camp, he was all over me, just telling me how Brad Maynard, which is one of my favorite punters, is, you know, the best at inside the 20s, and I don't think you're even going to get close to him this year. And he kind of personally challenged me and just kind of ruffled my feathers and just said, look, if you're not out here to do your best every time, and I want you to have the most inside the 20s, this, just whatever the category is, I want you to be on top of it. And so he kind of made that personal challenge, and I love when I'm challenged. So I was happy with what we did, and now this year we got to kind of build on that and, you know, help the offense out again, and obviously the defense with Romeo in. He's already got some great ideas, and so I'm looking forward to, you know, pinning them deep and watching them with a long field, really.
Now, we'll take your inside the 20 percentage going up. We'd like the number of inside the 20s to go down. We'd like your number of punts to go down. I mean, that means more production from the offense, and it does. There have been a lot of great additions to this team on both sides of the football. Offensively, a lot of weaponry, it looks like, given to Matt Cassel and the guys to work with. But I think the two biggest names that were added to this team were not players, they were coaches. It was Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel. As a member of the football team, when they got those guys added to the equation, how did you react?
Awesome. I mean, it's fantastic to see that, you know, Charlie Weiss would come in out of a, you know, after a head coaching role and step in and just kind of call this home. And he's done exactly that, just with his wife, his kids, and his kid. And it's going to be fun to see what he does, because he has such a knack for just the little details and stuff. Like when we're even in walkthroughs and stuff like that, and I think I've said this before in the past, how you watch like a Tony Gonzalez run a route in practice, and he's just in shells, no contact. And he runs it like, you know, he's telling that defender, that linebacker, whoever's coming over to guard him, he's saying, listen, I want this to be as close to practice or close to game like as possible. And Charlie's the same way. If you are 3 inches off of a route, he's going to point it out. That's not after practice and on film. That's on the field. He'll stop everything and say, this is important. You know, I don't care if you're 3 inches, whatever he says. But, I mean, his attention to detail, and the same with Romeo. He's not afraid to stop practice 10 times for one play if it's not right.
All right, it's your sixth year in the league. Do you feel like now it's time for this team to take off and you know, be back in the postseason and really start accomplishing some things?
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. Because in 2006, we had that playoff run. Obviously, we didn't do as well offensively, moving the ball up in Indianapolis, and then next year you just have some breakdowns at the end of the games. It seems like we were so close and. Yeah, same thing last year. Obviously, everything kind of got blown up. But I think this year, like you said, we have a lot of tools, not only with Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel, but you have Todd Haley now that has he's not doing the offensive coordinating stuff and doing, all these different things, which if you ask any of the guys, he wants to win more than anybody ever. And he's the most competitive person I've ever met. I'm not just saying that because he's kind of an old family friend. He just wants the best for everybody. He wants Clark Hunt to be his best. He wants Kansas City to be his best. And he thinks that is a direct reflect of what we need to step up and do that. And so with Thomas Jones, we've got tools now that are going to be – it's going to enable us to be competitive and to play football, obviously. We just got to go out in there and make it work. We've got the tools now. We have the coaches. We have that game plan that's essential that, Todd Haley always talks about. And so now we just got to go out there and do it, make it happen.
You mentioned being a family friend. I said earlier your father kicking for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Of course, his father, longtime personnel man with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You got any, family secret on Todd Haley or some great story that you got in your pocket that if you ever need it, you can drop on him?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a good one. One that he affirmed. My dad told me about, and he affirmed. They were in pregame, and Todd, when he was growing up, he would catch balls during the pregame and stuff. My dad or Gary Anderson or whoever was kicking and punting and stuff, he would catch balls for him and shag him and throw them back to another guy, give it to my dad or whatnot. And Todd actually told me the story. He was like, "Look, I don't know if your dad's told you this, but this is completely true. If he told you," and so I was like, "Well, let me hear it." And I met him the day he was getting interviewed or kind of welcomed into the Chiefs family.
Right.
I just happened to be over that day, and he said my dad was kicking an inside the 20 ball, and he hit the nose up, and so it came down really weird and started pulling back upfield like you want it to do, like inside the 20,
right,
the 10, whatever. So Todd just started taking off because he saw he was going to have to, sprint to get there. Well, at the last second, he said it just kind of cut down on him, and it hit the ground and took a one hop right up in the midsection. He said just during pregame, he basically just collapsed, hit the ground and slid about 2 yards just because the ball just checked up and hit him.
Wow.
And so he's like, "Never, ever do that to me." And I was like, "Don't worry about it. I will never punt a ball your way, ever."
Probably wise decision,
yeah.
There.
I enjoy my job. I love taking care of my family. You don't have to worry about that.
Good plan. Have you looked at the schedule, or do you just take it, the old adage, one game at a time?
Never. I always look at the last 5 games and see how it's going to be late. But I think we've got a good schedule. Obviously, I see, anytime you go to Cleveland early, you don't want to face that lake real late in the year.
Right.
We got some good indoor games. So I'm excited about it. Obviously, anytime you start a season off with Monday Night Football at your place, it's going to be an exciting year. I think that obviously, and we've talked about this all off season, is, right now we're preparing for that September the 13th game, and that will be kind of like the stepping stone to a great season or a good season or, you know, one that doesn't start out how we want to, and we want to really make a big impression. We want to start good for our fans, and I know Clark has worked really hard to get that game here, and we're looking forward to working hard and getting to the point where we're prepared to, you know, take down the Chargers.
Dustin Colquitt is with us. He will be punting on that Monday night game against the San Diego Chargers, the 13th, September the 13th. It will be a great open to the season. We'll wrap things up with the final four, four quickies. You were pick number 99. Do you follow pick number 99 in every draft because that was your number?
Actually, I haven't. I didn't do it this year because I was more on the phone, ready to. I had it taped, and we. My wife just had a new baby, and so I've been busy doing stuff like that. But I was more looking for who's going to be Mr. Irrelevant, especially once you played with him all year and you realize that he's not, you know, he was very relevant.
Yeah, he's going to have to lose his title now.
Yeah, so I called, as soon as it happened, I called him, and I'm like, hey, man, you're not Mr. Irrelevant anymore. And, you know, Ryan's like, well, I thought I did good enough this season. Like, at the end of the season, I thought that was over. So, no, I haven't seen number 99 in a year. So.
Okay. Just didn't know if you kept your eye on it.
No.
All right, what is the perfect punt?
The perfect punt is a punt that dribbles inside the five. You have your coverage guys coming down. It's very effective, and they stop it somewhere inside the 2-1 yard line. Your defense comes out. It's kind of the fourth quarter. You've pinned them deep, and you know that all that has to happen is the defense is going to stop, and we're going to take it to the house. We're going to win, and the tailgating picks up after the game, just like it did before the game.
Very nice. What is the perfect size for a punter?
Perfect size, 6'3", 217.
Yeah, I kind of thought that as soon as I heard 6'3". I thought you're listed at 210 though. Do you have 7 pounds to lose, or is that just an old weight from when you first came out of college?
That's an old weight. Just like my picture, I'm going to try to keep that as long as possible. Even if I'm a dinosaur 15 years in, I'm going to keep that same just out of college picture.
I like that. I like that. That's a good plan. And finally, that is the last question. How long would you like to play?
As long as they'll keep me.
Yeah.
Hopefully, one day I'll be walking into my 20th training camp and tell the young buck that they brought in to get rid of the old dinosaur that my hamstrings can't take it anymore and this is your job. But I'm going to push you and make you take it from me.
Yeah, well, that's a good plan. Well, certainly we're not looking to get rid of you anytime soon, that's for sure, Dustin.
Well, I appreciate it. I love it here.
Well, great. Hey, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll see you up in St. Joe.
Yes, we will. Hey, you're the man. I appreciate your call.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to KCChiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
In today's hectic world, it's hard enough to find time to manage all your commitments and still find time to pursue a higher education. But at Columbia College, we make it easier. Classes are just 8 weeks long, and you can earn your associate, bachelor's, or master's degree on campus, online, or both. Apply now to Columbia College in Kansas City at www.ccis.edu/about-time. That's www.ccis.edu/about-time.
Hey, Chiefs fans. I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at KCChiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback? That is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At KCChiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at KCChiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs Cheerleader squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at KCChiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, wrapping things up here on the Red Zone, big program today. I want to thank Dustin Colquitt, Chiefs punter, for joining us last segment, a guy who's been outstanding since being a somewhat of a surprise third-round draft pick for the Chiefs, number 99 overall, has been an outstanding selection for the organization, and hopefully we'll have another outstanding year for the Chiefs. Also a great guy as well, works very hard in the community. Good guy to have on your roster and in your community. And also want to thank Eric Hicks, another one of the good guys in the NFL, former Chiefs defensive end, joining us earlier here in the Red Zone. So for Curtis Siebold, Brad Young, Adam Pellegrino, Soren Petro saying thank you very much for joining us here in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to The Red Zone with Soren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com.